The first question is, in your role as president of a community college.
I have trouble hearing you.
All right. Is this any better?
A little better.
Okay. In your role as president of a community college, what is it that you do that focuses upon the future direction of your college?
We have to stay in touch with not only the college community, but the community as a whole. We're a carpet industry. We depend heavily on the carpet industry for students, for support, for family support, and that sort of thing. So we have to stay in touch with not only our college family, but our college community, but the community in general. As we're a state-supported institution, so we have to stay in touch with state organizations and state people also. We ask a lot of questions. We have a lot of committees. We talk to a lot of people.
Can you describe an incident that required you to redirect the focus of your college?
We're in the process of that now. As I mentioned, we're a carpet industry. We're aware, and there's every evidence that the carpet industry, which has been heavily labor oriented, just two hands, no skills involved. But that's changed in the last few years, and the change is rapid. And so, what we're attempting to do is to move more in the vocational and technical area, move to more technical, with more emphasis in areas like electronics, computers, and that sort of thing for the carpet industry, which had no need for that sort of thing up to this time. Also, the state is involved in pretty much the nationwide thing of a move toward elitism, and we feel that about 80% of the students are going to be forgotten in that move. Most of the emphasis is going to be toward college transfer. So we are trying to find ways to reach that 80% forgotten that Dr. Parnell talks about and many others, with two-year associate degrees and with ways of getting them involved in the transfer program also. So those two movements are pretty strong in our state at this particular time. You know, the move toward more technical workers and the move toward elitism. I call it neo-elitism.
Well, what is the state doing to make that kind of move?
The state has adopted what we call the Curriculum 88, and students who have not taken the college preparatory curriculum in high school, I think, are penalized rather severely. When they come to us, if they have not had the math and English, I don't have any problem with that. Those are the basics, and that's what we've always done. We are involved in a rather strong developmental program for them. But the problem, if they must have prescribed courses in social science. If they don't have prescribed courses in social science, then we must require them to take a college course in social science without college credit. They must make a C. The same thing is true in lab science. They must take a lab science course and for no college credit. If they do not have two courses in high school foreign language, we must require one foreign language, one course in foreign language at the college level before they can take college work. So a student who had taken the general track in high school might be here for a year before he takes any college credit courses for credit. And that's a problem. We're trying to find ways of solving that problem.
I see.
In connection with vocational technical, in connection with two-year terminal degrees, in connection with two-year terminal degrees that might later become transfer degrees in some areas for them. And then we're providing summer experiences for those who want to take the language and the social science and that sort of thing so that they can start out in the fall.
Okay, Dr. Roberts, can you tell me, explain or characterize your particular style of leadership?
I guess it would be, I don't think of it as a style, I don't suppose. I've read most of what I know about management. I've never taken a course in any kind of management. My training is in history. But I guess it would be participation and delegation. I depend heavily on staff.
Can you tell me about a particular situation which demonstrates your leadership style?
Let me see. What comes to mind are current things, and I guess that's as good as any.
That certainly it is.
A current situation. We have a search committee searching for a dean of students, and it's a divided committee at this particular point, there's some self-imposed pressures. And one of the pressures was that they wanted the situation settled by today, as a matter of fact. And so I've met with them twice. I've never divulged a choice in the matter. But I've met with them twice. And what I've asked them to do is to relieve themselves of the self-imposed pressure and wait for a week. We'll be on spring break. They'll be between quarters next week. And then get back on registration day and see if they can resolve their problems at that particular time. And I suppose that sort of thing had never occurred to the committee. They thought that they had had to do it by now, by today, but that was their imposition, not mine.
I see. And are you part of the committee?
No.
No.
The committee will report to me.
I see. Okay. So you will accept their recommendation?
Yes.
Okay. How would you describe your relationships to students and staff in your institution?
My feeling is it's quite informal. I feel very comfortable strolling into somebody's office just to chat. I feel very comfortable with that, and they do too. And I do that. I'm trying to be. We're small. We're less than 2,000 students, around 1,693 in the fall. And so I like it to be that if I'm in the building, people don't say, "Well, wonder what the problem is." It's kind of normal to see me in the buildings. And in people's offices and in the student center with students. I teach periodically, and that's how I get to know students a little better. I enjoy teaching very much, and so I still continue that as needed when they need me. And that's how I get to know students for the most part. I get to know the student and then their friends from that. Of course, in a community, and I've been here for 17 years, I know a good many of their parents now, and that helps.
Could you tell me about a particular incident or situation which describes your orientation or relationship with students or faculty or administrators or board members?
A particular incident?
Mm-hmm. Or situation?
Let's see. Some time ago, the whole college did. A problem with a local newspaper reporter, not necessarily the newspaper, it precipitated in some right unfavorable newspaper articles that were unfounded. In the process, I asked a faculty committee. It was a plant operation problem, but I asked a factory committee to investigate. In the process of that, gained a tremendous amount of support from faculty on the matter. Their report was a very good one, very helpful. And in the process, support came from all faculty and all students and virtually all the plant. And in the process, I never submitted myself to any interview by the reporter in question. The committee took care of that, and my advisors at the state level suggested that I not submit myself to any kind of questions from the reporter.
And
handled all that for me.
And the interaction with the faculty then increased your interaction, your relationship with them.
Absolutely.
That's wonderful. Could you describe how you as a college president motivate others around you?
Let me see. We have a number of changes, as I indicated. I talk a good deal with faculty and students too, and as well as administrative colleagues about the changes. And most of the changes are right exciting for faculty and for colleagues, even though some of them are challenges. I guess just interaction and information and discussion, sometimes even disagreements, helps with that. It's difficult to do with salaries at this particular point, and I'm not sure that's the best way to do it anyway, as far as motivation, because the salary increases over the past few years, while we've had salary raises, they have not been the kind that that would motivate. They've been 3% and 4%, that sort of thing. So we have to depend on internal things, discussions, challenges, duties, that sort of thing.
When you speak of changes, are you talking about changes in programming or curriculum or those sorts of things?
Yeah, they're... As I mentioned, the Curriculum 88 thing is a change. We've changed our whole curriculum in the past year, and it'll go into effect in the fall of this year. And we're in compliance with the state board regents, which supervise. We don't have a local board. We're state. We have a state board. So there's been a good deal of work there. Then, as I mentioned, our vocational technical area is changing drastically. Even the nursing, we have a critical nursing shortage and the allied health shortage in our area. Then on top of that, there's sort of the wide sweep of, as I say, neo-elitism that I don't think we necessarily need to fight. I think we need to find ways of helping those who are victims of that sort of thing. And we could lose some really good students in the process of that. Then the competition in our area, public and private institutions, competition with each other. We're 30 miles away from Chattanooga, and there's competition from schools there. So we've had to do a good bit in marketing, which most of the Georgia colleges have never been involved in before. So we've gotten heavily involved in that, and this is the third year of a rather strong marketing program that we've been involved in. We've not been too involved in federal grant programs before, and in the last 2 years we've moved into that. We're involved in Title III and in co-op education and that sort of thing for the first time in a long time.
I see. Could you tell me about an incident in which you inspired others?
That I inspired others?
Yes.
Gosh, I don't, in the incident with the newspapers, I suppose, some colleagues were complimentary of the choir. I operate rather quietly in such times and don't say much, but I depend on timing, and the timing was of the essence there, and I guess what I could think of. The timing there in appointing the committee report, and then action that I took in solving the problem. I think in solving the problem, which took some rather drastic action, it was taken care of quietly, and not many people knew how drastic the action was.
I see. Dr. Roberts, how do your personal values impact your position as college president?
Well, I guess it goes back to a rather basic farm background. I'm the son of a 100-acre farm, came off of a 100-acre farm in the southern part of the state. I am Baptist. All of that figures into it. I have, Anglo-Saxon, Judeo-Christian values. I'm sure it affects decisions on campus, and I don't apologize for that, but I'm sure that it does. Sort of basic Southern Protestant, I suppose. Although we have all denominations on campus, and as far as I know, it doesn't bother anybody. I'm sure that affects. Basically, my philosophy in hiring is in one of my early teaching jobs. In my early teaching college jobs, I was involved with a Methodist school. I was teaching in a Methodist school. And a colleague told me once, a math colleague, an older fella, told me that, and I had young, babies at that time. My children were very young, and he said, you know, your teaching ought to reflect what you want people to teach your children, who teach your children to have. And that sort of impressed me. And so when we hire and that sort of thing, I think in terms of what I want my children to study with that particular professor.
Good thinking. And I don't think you have to apologize at all for any of those values. I think you're quite right. I think we need more of that. Could you tell me about an incident in which your values were challenged?
There have been several. But I guess the foundation, we have a foundation which is rather successful, and I was offered by the foundation, in essence, a free and open slush fund, and I would not accept that. I do have an expense account, but I spend the money and then request it. It's that sort of thing. I have an account within the foundation that I can see. The state doesn't allow us to buy dinners and coffee and that sort of thing for guests. And so what I do is spend. If there's a dinner that I would like for this particular fund to pay for, I just send them the bill for it. In other words, the money never touches my hand. So
right.
And then once in a while, there'll be a sociology professor who will challenge One I remember wanted to camp on campus with a mixed group, and I had to say that my my South Georgia upbringing it would not allow me to accept that. I don't think the community would have either. But I don't know. Is that what you had in mind?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Those are good examples. The last question is sort of a blue sky question.
Okay.
If you could change education in any way, what would it be?
If I could change it in any way?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I'd have to talk about that in relation to our current situation, our state and our community. I think I would make it possible, more possible, for more people with fewer barriers at a time when we need more people involved in our kind of education. The barriers, we're just placing barrier after barrier to keep them out instead of take them in. And I guess I would attempt to take down educational barriers. We prove that we can do remedial education. We prove that. High schools can't do it, but we prove that that we can do it. And so if that's a problem, we can solve that problem for them. If there are financial problems, we ought to be able to solve that for them. The only problem we have is attitudinal problems, I guess, that would be a problem. That in our local area. And then I spent some time on a sister city thing in Brazil, and then in the last few days we've had some Honduran people on campus, which is appropriate, isn't it?
It really is.
We've had some Honduran people on campus, and I'm struck by how much those areas need our kind of school.
Is that right?
They don't have our kind of school. They don't understand our kind of college, and how much they need it. And how much we're becoming like them, and so with the elitism, all of them go to the university and become doctors and lawyers and engineers without any thought of going into medicine, law, and engineering, just for prestige. And I feel that that's happening to us. You know, they're going into elitist schools that's the way everybody's trying to become that sort of thing. And it's all for prestige and not much for the broad scope for a larger number of people. I know the old thing about service industries and that sort of thing, but I think it's broader and deeper and more complicated than we're making it at this point. And I think that many, many more people ought to be involved, regardless of age, regardless of place, regardless of funds, regardless of background.
In relation to your observation of people in Brazil and the Hondurans, have you given any thought to any efforts in international education?
We talk about it, but it's a complicated matter for us, and we do have more than the usual, more than I would have thought we would have had in international education. We have about 8 or 10, but you see, we were off up here in the mountains, and those 8 or 10 are carpet related. They live with families and that sort of thing. We don't have dormitories, and we can't provide transportation, that sort. So it's a problem. But yes, we would like to get involved in that, and maybe we will.
I was wondering about taking some of your courses to them.
Well, the Hondurans were here. We are involved with the community. This is not a Dalton Junior College program. This is Chamber of Commerce, a whole group, and we're just involved in it. As a matter of fact, it's housed on our campus, but it's a reading, teaching adults to read. And it's a stay-in-school movement and all that, and as I say, the office is on our campus, but it's really a Chamber of Commerce project, and that's what the Hondurans were doing here. And we, in our continuing education program, we teach reading tutors to teach people to read, and that's our main involvement. But that's what they were doing here, and I would like to export that. I think they do an excellent job.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Roberts, I really appreciate the time that you've shared with us, and again, congratulate you on your selection to this group, and we will have that questionnaire out to you in the next week or so.
Thank you very much. I hope I didn't chase too many rabbits for you.
No, you certainly didn't. It was enjoyable.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
But to find out whether or not I was up to snuff, up to their standards here, there was an interview. I came here and went into the division chairman's office, and in there sat the dean of academic affairs, the chairman of the division of natural sciences, and each of the department chairmen, math, physics, chemistry, and earth science, and biology. And we sat in this room about the size of this room, maybe a little smaller, and they fired questions at me about my subject. It wasn't really a tight, tense, intimidating test. It was a social gathering where we talked about science.
Mm-hmm.
I was comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very lucky, too, in one respect, because there was an earthquake that morning. And it just so happened that I heard about it on my car radio. And I knew about it, and they didn't.
Oh, yeah.
Because traveling to this campus, I had my car radio on, and I was listening to the news. And that impressed, and that was just a stroke of luck.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But the fact that they cared whether or not I knew about my subject impressed me a great deal.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know whether that practice still goes on. I doubt it. I think then they might have had the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is probably the first thing I'd do, though. I would check out the person's knowledge of their subject somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow. I know that grades don't always, grades that the person got when they were in graduate school don't always tell the whole story. So somehow I would have to hear that person communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Not like you and I are communicating on a level really unrelated to the science that I teach, but actually communicate about the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Now what if it was a subject I didn't know anything about? What if I was a chairman of the Department of Physics and Earth Science, and it was a person who was in the physics part rather than the earth science, and I wasn't sure whether he knew what he was talking about? I think I just have to point blank be honest about it and say, we're just going to have a confab here. We're just going to have an hour-long bull session and talk about the subject with myself and another faculty member.
Assuming you could know whatever you wanted to know, like, you know, you could create a situation where you could know whether that person had a valid knowledge of physics or something.
Uh-huh.
What qualities would you really be looking for?
By saying this, I'm afraid that I'm exposing my vanity to you, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Good.
I would look for a showbiz personality. Not a Johnny Carson with a monologue at the beginning of each class, but I'd look for somebody who had some personality, who wanted to sell the subject to his students. Who wanted to, what was it my Cuban student called? Evangelical zeal.
Mm-hmm.
Not sickeningly
mm-hmm.
so, but not like Mr. Wizard on television, who used to use the word experiment when it never was. It was always a demonstration. It was never an experiment. With an experiment, you don't know what the outcome is going to be. He always knew what the outcome was going to be. So that was a demonstration. But I tried to find somebody who really liked to communicate with people and who didn't mind, or as a matter of fact, looked forward to the challenge of communicating if it was here, I was doing higher. Mm-hmm. Communicating with people with varied interests, varied aptitudes, and varied backgrounds. That's a real challenge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, what kind of skills is that really? I mean, what would they have to have? What do you have to have?
I think they have to be able to command attention and command some respect and deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
Not just say, I've got to have respect this semester from you guys if you want to survive this course. I mean, behave in such a way that they earn it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how in the world I would, in hiring a faculty member, determine whether or not they had that ability. What if it was their first year teaching? What if they just gotten fresh out of graduate school? No one to talk to on the phone to find out what kind of a teacher they were, how they handled the classroom setting.